There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Insane in the membrane.
Hello and welcome to another edition of your favorite podcast, Insane in the Membrane, with me, Rich Wilson. And this week I'm joined by the wonderful John O'Sullivan. Here he is. Hello.
Poor you. I'm so sorry. You couldn't get anyone else, so it's just me this week. They're all too, all the well-knowns are too busy, so you've got me.
This is where I'm at now with guests. I'm getting friends on.
I know. This is how desperate. You'll be getting pets on next.
Where do we find you this morning, John? Where are you?
I'm in Scarborough.
Are you? Do you live there?
Not at all. No, I thought I'd come away for a week and stay in my friend's Airbnb because I'm trying to get on with things and I can't get on with things. And I've spent my entire time on Grindr here. And Grindr in Scarborough is like, you know, remember the game Guess Who?
I do.
Like,
yes.
Bob or Robert. And they were all just basically ugly people. That's what Grindr's like here. It's like Chernobyl.
Are you traveling around each town trying to use up all the Grindrs? Is that what you're trying to do?
Yes, I'm doing a book. I've got a book deal about Grindr and where the best places are in England, and I can tell you that the worst place in England for Grindr is Scarborough, followed by Dorset, followed by Bridport in Dorset.
Really?
And East Grinstead, where my parents live, yeah.
Oh, I thought Bridport would be quite interesting. It's a nice little town.
Anything coastal, they're a bit inbred.
Oh, really?
A bit Norfolk. Hello, Rich.
Hello, John. It's lovely to have you. Welcome to the show.
We
know each other, but we don't really know each other. This is why.
I was
interested in getting you on.
I came to see you. Well, I didn't come to see you, actually, I have to be honest. I came to see Clinton Baptiste and Alex.
That's right.
And I was with Vaughan. And then we all met up for a drink afterwards and fell in love a little bit. Well, I did,
yes,
anyway.
We did.
There was you, your good lady to be, and now is your good lady, Kate. There was Alex, Vaughan, and a man called Sean who had a fried egg on a piece of string, but we won't talk about him. Do you remember him?
I do remember him. And you kind of went, yeah, that's what he does. And we all went,
yeah, well, try going on holiday with him.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, they found it a hoot in Turkey. And so that's how we met. And I saw you do the compare job. Compare job, sorry.
Warm-up job, yeah.
Yeah, but that's what you were. You were just chatting with guests, being funny, obviously, because that's what you do. So that's the first time I'd ever seen you, heard about you, but ever since then I've been quietly in love with you. I'm not just saying that. You're a very when I was younger, right, and many years ago, there was a guy who was always a brilliant compere. I don't know if he still does it now. Is Steve Kamos?
Yes.
And you've got that same likability as him, which I think is massively important when you do what you do. I think I prefer likability and funny than asshole and funny.
I think it's, yeah, I mean, when I do, that's the job of the warm-up or the job of the MC is to be, you're kind of on the side of the audience rather than kind of against them. You're telling them, like, we are going to have a really good time tonight. We are going to have fun. And it's, yeah, I don't know where it comes
from.
You
can't train that at all.
No.
You can't. It's either it's in you or it's not. And people yeah. like Steve and you have got that thing that just enables you to be able to talk to people, take the piss a little bit, but effectively be funny. So that's a good thing. Anyway, that's my compliment over. There's not going to be any more.
I was going to say, what's this leading up to?
I know. Do you fancy a blazer? I know.
We'll save it for the end. We'll keep it for the Patreons.
We'll do it for the extra DVD clips. Yeah, is there such
that's
a thing
it,
as
yeah.
that?
I don't know. I don't. It's been a while.
Has it?
So
that's what happens when you get married.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Oh, you mean about the DVD?
But what do you do? I don't know. I see you performing. So you're a performer.
Yeah, I'm probably the laziest performer you'll ever meet.
Right.
The laziest performer with absolutely zero confidence.
Really? You look pretty confident. Yeah. You sound confident.
I know, but I've been doing it on and off for 20 years.
Yeah.
And then I'll do a show and then I'll go, oh, I've done that now. I'll just go off for 3 years and forget about it and do something else. And I haven't got that. Due to things going on, I'm sure with the power of this podcast will be going a bit serious, maybe not. But due to confidence and things going on in my life, I struggle to continue something. And
right.
So I've done a lot over a period of years, but I don't do what you do, which is get out there and sweat my arsehole off to, you know, do
no.
Because I've got a fear of it going wrong. And so if I put on a show, it's my show, I can control the show. But I couldn't go and do what you did. I wouldn't be able to sit in a car with comedians for that fear they didn't. It's just fear. It's fear and rejection. Cheerful no. start.
But I think that's in a lot of us, especially performers. We all want to be liked and accepted. But there's so many this conflict going on in our own heads, isn't there? And
yeah,
it's a funny one.
I decided from the off, right? I remember it was in 1995. I entered the Daily Telegraph Comedy Awards, and I went into a room with comedians, and I just froze in that room, but not on stage, but froze in the behind the stage bit, because I was like, they were all, but you know what it's like. The funny doesn't just stop on the stage, does it? The funny continues in the green room, and it's a real pressure. And it happened when I did a Christmas at the Comedia. I was comparing, and there was all these names that I knew. There was like Sean, and who's that crazy Canadian guy that's friends with Sean, who went a bit mental. I can't remember his name.
Campbell.
Yeah. Craig, and then there was Simon Hughes, and I was just like, I felt like an absolute fraud. There's all these guys that have been doing it for years who are brilliant at what they do, and I traipsed in, and I just stood in the corner like an absolute freak. I was fine on stage, happy out there. I couldn't cope with what went on behind, and that fear of going on the circuit for the people be like, who's that weird guy, the noncy-looking man in the corner, just sat there, not saying a lot. And so that put me off. So doing my own stuff is just sort of I can control that and don't have that worry. But even then, I'm not doing enough because I'm a lazy bastard.
But that's it. The more you do it, the more that kind of the imposter syndrome will go away. Like,
you reckon? I don't know how. My friend has said to me, if I'm not back doing stand-up by the 4th of April, he's going to punch me in my face.
Okay.
And the thing is, he will punch me in my face because he's my best mate down in Sussex, Austin. He will punch me in the chops if I don't get on with it. But it's that scared of doing it. And so I do everything I possibly can to avoid it. But still sit there and go, why aren't I doing it? It's weird. I'm weird. Sorry.
That's it. No, but that's it. That's all part of being a performer. We assume so much that, like you've just said, like people, like you're in a green room and your insecurity is coming because you haven't been doing it as long or as many times as the other people on the bill. But and then you're going, oh, they think this about me, they think that about me, and they're not even thinking that.
No, they don't
care. They're probably
care.
thinking Either they don't care, or they're thinking, "Oh, John's a bit quiet. I wonder what's going on there. I hope he's all right." And you're going, "Oh, yeah. They fucking think I'm a nonce. They think I'm this, I'm that, the weird fella in the corner." And it's all in your own head. It's all assumption.
Yeah, I know.
And I say that. I do it myself.
But you, I mean, you've been doing it now for nearly 20 years. No,
20 years.
20 years.
20 years in October, yeah.
Because you started the same way that I did. We both worked in a comedy venue.
That's right.
You worked behind the bar, I think, I remember it right.
Yeah,
I worked as a waiter. And that was the night Steve Camos used to come every month. And I heckled, and you've probably heckled in your time, even as a barman, probably at the comedy bar. And then, just that love of it, you know, we've entered a similar path, but you've got the confidence and gutso to continue it on a nightly, weekly basis. I haven't. And I think it's because I know that I've got to start again.
Mm.
And maybe I should just go around for the next 20 years just doing warm-ups, and then everyone's a bit nice. You know what I mean? Like, you know, when you do warm-ups, when you do your first go, and everyone's a bit like, "Oh, bless, good on him." Or
is it like an open spot, open mic-er. Spot.
Maybe I should do open spot for the next 20 years, so everyone will have that half feel sorry, and I can just get away with it, be well seasoned and professional. But no, I'm just an open spot. Don't bother paying me. That's what I should do.
So do you think but all this insecurity just sounds like it's coming from. It's coming from you want to be a performer, but you haven't done it enough. But so you just, the only way you're going to cure it is by doing it. So I think that is go and do these little gigs in places like open mic places. Just go and get used to standing on stage in front of people.
Yeah. But I do, the thing is, right, like last year I did a gig in Horsham in front of 3,000 people, and I compared there's no hesitate getting out there and doing comparing and warm up is ideal. It's coming out there and doing a set. And I still, after all this time, don't know what that could be or how my angle is. Like, the ideas are there, tons. I'm good at coming up with ideas, but actually going, right, here's 20 minutes without, you know, it's like you've got to have a set before you go off and go off and flow and make stuff up. You know, you've got to have the core before you piss off and start taking the piss and maybe forgetting your script and then just going out there and having fun. But I can do that bit. I haven't got the and I don't know what that is. And I've always struggled, and I've had people try and help me, and I don't care. I've paid people to try and help me come up with ideas. And the ideas are there, but I'm like, what happens if it doesn't? I know I should just do it. And this is really boring. I do apologise.
No. I've been going through a very similar thing. I'm really busy club wise, but I'm working on a show. But no one's asked me to work on the show. No one's expecting a new show from Rich Wilson. So it's all on me. So then the insecurity started getting into my head. It's like, what's the point in me doing this? What is anyone going to come if I put this on? Is anyone going to care? And then you get to a point, you go, well, I just won't do it then. I just won't do it. And then I'm talking myself out of it. So I'm doing the same thing. The insecurities are all in my own head. No one is sitting there. They're not, maybe not waiting for a show from Rich Wilson, but they might be pleased if they see one. They go, I'll go to that. It's all in my own head.
But whilst you're having that insecurities, Rich, you know that you might have four gigs that week that you just get off and do you know what I mean? And so you've got that. It's that will happen. The big gig will happen, like the ITVX thing. You know, things like that will continue. But whilst you're doing that, you know, you're still traipsing around the country doing what you do. And so, you know, and I admire that. I admire the ability to, and I know it's there. But maybe I don't know what really does actually stop me. I don't know. But who, you know, I've got to give it a go. Or else, as I said, I get a punch in my face by my friend by the 4th of April. Rich, can't you just become my like mentor or something? And then I just go around with you everywhere. And then you go, just get on stage, you freak.
Yeah, come
and
with
I
me.
Just run up. Yeah. Will you just become like my comedy boyfriend?
Yeah, okay, I'll do that for
I know that sounds a bit creepy, but it's not supposed to be.
But this is the thing, you come across as very confident, and it's just that it's that stereotypical performer where we, because of what we do, people go, "Oh, you must be so brave and confident," but they don't realize that we spend a lot of time sitting on our sofas, just racked full of guilt and insecurity, and what's the point? And then we go out on stage and go, "I'm the best one in here. I'm the funniest person in the room." And then you get back in your car and you're like, "Oh God, why? What's wrong with me?"
Yeah.
It's a weird one, isn't it?
I think confidence wise on the stage, not a problem. It's just getting from the sofa to the car, to the comedy club, because even doing open spot, I know that I could just go up there and just try, you know, just get more confidence back in just by doing it. And so I wouldn't even have to have a proper set. I could explain what I'm doing. It's just the getting there. It's always been about getting there. It's not actually doing it, because once I do something, I tend to be quite good at it. It's just the ability. And maybe that's because of things that are going on in my own head that have been for years, or maybe the desire's not there, but it sort of is, because I've got nothing else. This is it. I'm 49. My sister was like, "Oh, you really should get a job." And I was like, "But I'm 49 and I'm slightly mental. And where do I go and work? I'm certainly not going to go and work in the co-op." So I don't know what to do. You know, I've got an agent that puts me up for auditions, which I never get, which I'm so used to now. And I'm like, what am I doing? I'm basically traipsing around the country looking at Grindr in different seaside towns. There's only so long that can go on for. I can't do it until I'm 60. I've just got to give something a go, and I've got to persevere.
It's all on you, John. It's all on you. And that's horrible. It's such a shit horrible thing to have to admit when you go, "It's on me." Whether this happens or not is on me. But it would be so much easier if you could just say to someone like you, just, it's like, "Could you just do that for me?" You go, "Yeah, come on." But we can't. It's actually, at the end of the day, and this is for everyone listening as well, there's that thing you want to do. No one is going to come and knock on your door tomorrow and say, "Right, we're going to go and do that thing that you want to go and do." It's, you have to go and do it. And it's hard. And, it's so hard.
It is. And I did years ago. As time has gone on, I'm struggling more. You know, I could put on a show. I did shows at the Hawth in Crawley, the Capitol in Hawth, all of that stuff. Easily, not easily, did it. And then the moment, I did a show at the Hawth and I was really proud of it. And, you know, it was 2011, a complete unknown. And I sold about 760 tickets at the Hawth in Crawley, which I never thought would happen. And a guy Facebooked me the next day. And he said, it was the worst thing that he's ever seen. And how dare I hire the Hawth? And I have no talent. And then I stopped for 5 years because of one
man. Was that one person?
One person. And it wasn't until 2016 when I thought I need to do something again. And I went to go to a comedy course in Brighton run by Dave Thompson.
Yeah, I know. Dave Thompson, yeah.
And he gave me back my confidence.
Oh.
So, mate, you know, it's hard. Sorry.
No, it's hard. No, it's this is the thing, John. This is the thing. Like, 700 people came, had a great time, but that one, it's always that one person that we focus on because it taps into those insecurities where we don't feel good enough. So then that one person goes, "You're not good enough." And we go, yeah, you're right. He's right. We don't listen to the other 699 people that went, "Oh my God, what a great night we just had. That was amazing." Yeah. We focus on that one idiot. He's obviously struggling with stuff as well. If we just took out his shit on you.
Yeah.
Because he would go through some other stuff. He's going, "Oh, that was shit." He doesn't realise that he's just pissed off because of his boyfriend or his wife or whoever whatever is going on in his life. And yet he doesn't realise that those words really rocked you and still rock you to this day.
Yeah,
you
know, they do.
It's not fair.
I think any criticism, I can cope with people calling me a wanker on stage. I love that. The more, you know, like they can be as personal as they like on stage because I'm the one with the microphone. And sometimes I can be quicker than them. Sometimes I can't. It's the way it goes. You know what it's like.
But yeah,
when you get something, when you're just looking at funny videos on Facebook and go into your inbox and you see that. And I know it is isn't a reflection on everyone, but if things are going on in your own life at the same time and then you get delivered something like that.
It's horrible.
You know, we've all dealt with stuff like on Twitter, people coming at us, coming at you. You might say, I can wash that off, but that felt so personal. You know what I mean? It's one thing for someone to go onto a Facebook. If I write a post on a local Horsham page, which I used to do, still love doing, winding people up, and someone comes back with something, you cope with it. But when it's directly in the inbox for me of someone being vile, but honest, I suppose, but I just found it odd. I thought it was mean. And as I said, I went and did Dave's comedy course, and it relit a little bit of a fire for a bit, for about two or three more years.
But this is what happens with people that do things like that. It's, you know, there's a guy on Instagram at the minute, and he's sharing other people's videos, singers and people, you know, doing nice things. And he's sharing the comments of horrible people underneath going, look at this idiot. This woman, she's got a great voice. She's just singing. But they're all making comments about her weight. They're making comments about this, that, and the other. And he's highlighting all the bullshit. And, you know, people use these. They use those things just to get, because they're hurting themselves. That's how I see it. A lot of people say that. It's that they've got their own bullshit going on. So that guy, he's not really annoyed about the fact that he came to see your show and he didn't enjoy it. He's just used you as a way to just get to just put his anger somewhere. The anger that's from something else, he's put it in your direction. He's like, fuck, I'm gonna tell this bloke he's a prick. And it's like, why? Because someone's calling you a prick. It's like it's that knock-on effect.
And, I'd understand it if I was rude to him on stage.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like if I'd sort of singled him out, because that's the other thing I used to love doing is just ripping it out of people. It's something I still enjoy. I enjoy watching it. I enjoy seeing a comedian really give it back to a heckler. It's the most joyous. But he didn't get any of that. He was just a guy sat about eating his minstrels. He only paid £12. I mean, that was probably a lot in 2011. But yeah, I only paid £12. I'm not like Jimmy Carr charging 30. He could have something to grumble about then. But no, £12. £12, and I got that. Fuck him.
Maybe he was annoyed about the minstrels because they were probably steep. They were about £3.
They were probably
more
than the ticket.
That's what he was really annoyed about. His confectionery cost more than the ticket.
It's
he was
true,
so
though.
Angry.
Don't you, when you go to the cinema with Kate, or probably not so much now, but previously, I imagine you used to go to the cinema a lot as a couple. You seem that type.
A few times. Yeah.
Like me, do you always go to the sweet shop beforehand and get the Haribo and the stuff before you go to the cinema? Because I do.
Yeah. What I love is to get a large popcorn and then tip minstrels into it. Love it.
Really?
Yeah, it's amazing.
What's the point in that? Because don't they all just go to the bottom?
Yeah, but then it's just nice when you find one. Yeah, oh, lovely. It's just a nice little... But you're talking about the insecurities of getting on stage and performing in front of people. Like, you want to do it, but you can't do it. But, you know, like you were just talking about Grindr. Now, Grindr and the social media, these dating apps, they're all about meeting strangers. How do you do that? Is it because you're more confident doing that than performing?
Cocaine.
Oh, yeah. No, I'll do that.
No. Yeah. The coke thing is not true. So,
no, of course not.
I think because I'm in control of that.
Right.
And so if I label what I want and I know what I want and it doesn't, then it works. You know, because I think control is a big part of my life. And I suppose, you know, a lot of comedians, you know, ADHD like the rest of the world. But part of that is control and being naughty. And So I cope with that because it's I manage to keep a handle on it.
Yes.
So if I get someone around a nut on them and send them on their way, then this is nice, isn't it? I can't believe we're talking about me nutting on feathers from Grindr. It's so grim.
We're just talking about this.
You didn't get this from Paul Foot. You got nice civilized chat from Paul Foot.
But I've never really spoken about Grindr and things like that before. And you mentioned it, so I was like, oh, we'll do that then. Let's talk about that.
It's a horrible... I think I definitely... In 2008, 2009, as you know, social media really came in, like Facebook. We're all Friends United, Facebook. And I think big part of my problem, reason why I haven't gone out and done stuff, is because of social media. And I think the big problem why I haven't met a man in my life, I've never had a boyfriend, I'm 49...
Really?
Isn't that sad? Is apps and social media almost, I sort of got a name for myself doing stuff online, and that's how I got my dopamine fix, you know, rather than, and the same with Grindr, it meant you don't have to go out and put yourself out. It's the same thing. I'm effectively not putting myself out there for comedy, for an audience or a man. Because that fear of all, you know, all, it goes through, it rolls around the comedy into my personal life. So if I can hide behind a computer or my phone, it's safe, but actually it's making me worse, you know, and it's, I should go out and date and I should go out and do open, you know, open spots.
Yeah, you should.
And maybe the more I go and do things that I don't usually do, maybe the happier my life might become. Because my life isn't very happy, and I have a privileged life to some extent, but I don't have a happy life.
Oh,
I'd love to know what being happy would be like, really.
And is that, where do you think that comes from? That, because you seem like you're always out and about, you're doing something, you're always somewhere.
On my own.
Right.
That's it's me.
Oh, John.
Me and my dog, basically. So it's sort of, I don't know.
Is it the insecurity that kind of keeps you away from, like, you? Because that assumption that you think people don't like you, or
I think you push people away. I think because, you know, a lot in life, we've all had it. We've had a lot of loss, and I think loss, and fear of people going, dying, leaving, binning me off. I just find it sometimes easier if I'm on my own, because I can't get hurt if I'm on my own, but I sort of am because I probably am, but you know.
Yeah. Where does that come from? Have you had people close to you leave? Yeah.
Leave, and that's, die.
Yeah.
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 A lot.
Really?
Yeah.
See, that's, yeah, it's horrible because you think it's, as you say, you think it's your fault, and it isn't your fault. That's the thing. Like, you know, if somebody dies, it's sad and it's horrible, but that's not, they didn't die because of you. That was it's just life, isn't it? And it's horrible, but you know, that's, so that was from a young age, was it?
Yeah, I lost my best friend at 21.
Right, okay, yeah.
And in a car crash. And I
so
suppose
it was sudden
at 21,
as well then, yeah.
Sorry?
So it was sudden as well.
Yeah. And he was my childhood friend. So he was the one that we went to school, Cubs, Scouts, learnt to ride our bikes. I would have been his best man at his wedding. You know, I probably would have been his godfather to his son or daughter. We never, you know, we last saw each other on Christmas. We used to serve on the altar, I'm a Catholic. So we used to serve on the altar, and on Christmas Eve, I was terrible to him. I was a terrible friend, but for some reason that he stuck with me. Mm. And on Christmas Eve, we were serving on the altar, and he said, I'll cycle you home, because he was a gent. We were only 20, 21, and he said, I'll walk you home. I thought, this now's a good time to tell him. I'm surprised he didn't know, because I was wearing leather trousers at the time. I don't know why. I don't ask. I don't know why I wore leather trousers. Anyway, not in a pervy, like, fetish way. Just wore leather trousers.
Yeah.
And we got back to my house, and I said to him, you know, got something to tell you, because he was very straight. You know, he loved, I went to the cinema with him when I was about 13, and he used to love, I was furious, but we were watching The Living Daylights. And he was fingering a girl behind me. And I was really annoyed. So he was, because it was a really good James Bond film, and I could hear just noises, unpleasant. Anyway, I don't know what I'm saying now. He was very straight. Mm. And I was the opposite. And I told him, and his response was, I'm happy if you're happy.
Right.
And that was the last time I saw him, because he died in a car crash in a sort of summertime, because we were both at college at the time. I was in Chichester doing drama, and he was in doing agriculture. And that was the last time. And so I think at the age of 21, like 25, well, nearly 30 years ago now, there wasn't the assistance there. There wasn't the support there. I wasn't getting the phone call to make sure I was okay. I just had to get on with it. And I never really did. And I think that played a massive part in and of how I deal with things as an adult. And that fear, and I've got a constant fear that people are going to die or go or suddenly leave. And I had it happen last year. It was someone else very close to me die very quickly. Mm. And I haven't, and I'm just like, who's next? You know, I've just got this, I'm waiting for that call for someone to ring me and say, they've gone. And that's how I live my life.
Mate, but that's because of what happened. No. But this is really helpful for people listening, because this happened to you. It's slap bang in the middle of your formative years, you know. So, of course, this is cast a huge shadow across your life going forward. So absolutely makes complete sense that you're now that, you know, it's now you just think that's going to happen to everybody. So why form connections with anyone if that's what's going to happen? But
I know it's just the fear of someone just not being there, you know, it's a horrible, and you know, it's not a way to live. Lots of people suffer loss and get, I know we all deal with things differently, but I just struggle with it. I really struggle with loss now, more so than ever before. It can be something so minute. You know, I had to put my friend's dog down before Christmas. You know, it was all just a it's just a, and as a dog is important to obviously and other people it may not be, but anything can set me off now. Even talking about it, you know. I suppose it's good that I am. You're much nicer than my therapist, Richie, and cheaper. So maybe we could continue this on a regular basis.
Yeah, I think we'll have it once a week. We'll meet up and we'll just chat. Maybe I'll just sack comedy off. I'll just become a counsellor.
I think you'd be very good. Because the thing about you is you care. And even if you don't, and I know you do. It's you've got a genuine, empathetic manner about you, which makes you very appealing.
Thank you.
Add that with Fanny. No wonder you've got a wife. You know, I'm sure you're a bastard once upon a time. I'm sure.
I've got a side. I can be. I have to physically say to myself, are you being a selfish prick right now? Yeah. I have to keep that in. I've got a side, and it comes out, and I have to be careful. That's only because I have been a bit of a shit.
Yeah, but I think, you know, so what? But you may be 10% shit, but 90%, you know, fantastic. And I think that you do have a manner about you.
Thank you.
So one day, if you did think, fuck it, you probably could be a very, very good counsellor therapist.
Maybe that's the way to go. Maybe I'll do that. But what's nice, though, talking about that, and when Vaughan was really ill, you were there.
Yeah.
He was, and that's even so, yes, you do have you have real trouble with forming connections with people because of that really, you know, horrible thing that happened to you at a young age. When it really matters, you're there, mate. And that's a beautiful thing.
I think it's massively important. I was brought up with mum and dad. We constantly had elderly relatives come and live with us or live in the house next door to us. I always went with my elderly relatives and stayed with them or the next door neighbours. I think, and I watched my mum, as fierce as she could be in many ways, this love and empathy towards people who are not only family, but also like friends or to do with the church, and the importance of looking after people. And so I've been brought up not to do that, but I've watched it. Mm. And with Vaughan, you know, I went up to work with Vaughan in 2019. I jacked everything in to go and live in Yorkshire. And I stayed in his house for a bit. And then we were planning to do Edinburgh. And then obviously the big COVID's happened, and we never got our, we had a show booked. It was all ready to go. And then the COVID's happened. Then we just did online, and then sort of like fell into normal life, and things didn't, you know, we've got a very creative relationship, but also we're both lazy pair of bastards. But he became really ill this year.
Yes.
And that was a struggle because he had a heart attack in March. And it felt very lonely because... Sorry.
You're all right, mate. That's all right, mate. That's all right. It's an upsetting thing.
It felt very lonely. And then when he got sepsis, I thought something shit was going to happen.
Mm.
And it didn't. So I went on holiday to Turkey. So the for a week. But he's constantly, you know, he's never going to be fighting fit, Vaughan.
No.
You know, it's never going to be something that's going to go away. And as you know, as much as, you know, I'd love it to, you know, he's got what's it called? Oh, arthritis, not the, just arthritis. Mm. Rheumatoid
arthritis. Yeah.
And polymyalgia. I always get mixed up with poly and fibro. You know, he's always got an underlying illness. So when to see him get hospitalised for a month, from that, and then the mistake, you know, when they didn't look after him and so he got sepsis, it was really hard. And then I went, you know, just as though he got better, another close friend of mine got very ill. And so it was literally within about a month or two. And so last year it felt like I was, and I wanted to, and I still do it for any of my friends, is end up being a bit like a carer.
Yeah.
And it's hard sometimes. Yeah. Because if you're not 100% yourself, it's very difficult. But I did it last year, you know, and I would change the outcome on one, and I'm glad that one is still with us. Mm. But, you know.
Yeah. But you fundamentally are a lovely man. As soon as we met, but it's the same as what I've just said. You know, people go, "Oh, Rich, you're so lovely, you're so caring." You're just, but I can be a cunt as well. I've got a side. If I'm tired, or something else is bothering me, or I said this on another episode, like I let the bitterness get in recently. I was letting all the shit. Like, why am I not getting this? Why am I not getting that? I just come away from my agent, and I was like, what's the point? I'm too old now. There's all shit, and blah, blah, blah. And I wasn't caring. I was getting very selfish. It was only because I had a conversation with a few people, and I went, "Oh yeah, I'm being a wanker. Okay, let's try and focus on what we do have." And that's where things started to turn around again. But it happens. We have to focus on what we do have.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together.
J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
You have, you know, you even though you say, you know, you spend a lot of time on your own and that, when we were out together, that first night when we all met was so lovely. And those moments don't come along very often when you meet people and go, I want this person in my life. I might not necessarily, like, I haven't seen you since, but we're still connected. And knowing that you're around, and when we talked about you coming on here, I was like, absolutely. Absolutely.
You mean when I was desperate, when I played you with a message, you mean?
You jokingly said about it. You jokingly said it. And I'm like, you know what? I'd fucking love you to come on. Because we had such a good time that night. It was a great connection.
Yeah.
And I think the more you stop sitting there in your own bullshit, John, getting out there, doing some fucking stuff, do your shows, get out there, stop wanking men off and get out there and do some stuff, you'll feel better about yourself, mate. That's what you need to do. No, you do it, but just balance it out of it.
but you're right though, but I won't stop wanking men off.
No, don't stop doing it, but just do
maybe prioritize. Cut it down to, like, once a day.
Yeah, once a day, one fella a day.
Yeah.
That's all you need to do. Like, that's the thing with, you know, when you're cutting down on stuff, you can't just quit. Like, if you're drinking or you're smoking or whatever, you have to sort of like wean yourself off.
As my mother said, everything in moderation. It's true though, isn't it? Mm. Like, you can do whatever in moderation, really.
And you might get a better quality of penis as well. If you cut down on how many, you might start
to
focus on the ones you really like rather than all of them.
Do you know what I bought at Christmas?
What?
I bought a gadget which you can connect to your phone, which is prints off loads of photos. So I was going to get like a disposable camera, but like an instant one, like a Polaroid camera, basically. Or I'll get a little printer, and it's really funky. And I'm doing a whole album for comedy purposes, of all the Grindr dongs that I've screen-saved on my phone. So I'm going to do a whole album, because I'm never going to have kids, right? So when my niece and nephew go through my stuff when I'm dead, I really like the idea of them going through the boxes and then just go, oh, look, he's got a photo album. And it's like, it's just dongs. It's just, it's dong. And I'm going to rate them from top to worst dongs of all time on Grindr. I might even get a publishing deal from that.
Do you know what? That would be a great coffee table book.
Yeah. Do you want it?
And I really commit, like, put the that real, oh, this was Graham from Skegness.
Yeah.
And we ended up, like, we went and had chips and we did this, we did that.
Yeah.
It's just a picture of his cock.
Shit, couldn't I?
Yeah.
Give
it a whole backstory.
Yeah.
Like, this was like you're describing, like, a beautiful moonlit vista of a couple holding hands on a beach, and it's just and it's just this horrible weird dong in it's a strange color.
I'm sorry, can I just apologize to any of the listeners that have just heard dongs on and off for the last hour? I do apologize for that.
No, it's
I
my
don't
fault.
Really, but I there'll be some people like, I'm switching off if you mention dong one more time. So
I think it's a bit of light relief. That's all this. Ironically, the irony.
Yeah, thanks.
Do you know what? It's just, Carly Smallman, comedian, brilliant comedian. She's got a whole song about the dick museum that she's got on her phone.
Really?
Yeah,
all send it to me. What's it called?
I think it's called the Dick Museum, and it's this all the dick pics she's been sent on her. They're all on her phone.
Really,
it's a really good song. It's really funny. I'll see if it's somewhere. It might be on YouTube somewhere.
It up, obviously.
Yeah, of course. I don't know if there's any pictures though, John.
I won't bother then. But I'm surprised. Does she not do it on stage and then have it like on a screen behind her, like all the dongs appearing?
Oh, she might have done. That rings
she's
a
missing
bell.
A trick there if she isn't.
I haven't seen that, but it might have been in a show that she might have done. I'll message her and I'll let you know.
I would love the idea because some theatres. I did a show at the Capitol Theatre in Horsham. It was like a chat show.
Right.
And it was called. They're a bit backwards in Horsham. And so
they seem all right. I've been there a few times at the Capitol.
You've done the one with Kevin Precious.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So I did the Capitol in the theatre. That was the last show I did in 2016. And it was called. It was a chat show called Come on My Sofa. And
fucking hell.
And the theatre, it went into the booklets. It's the whole place sold out. And on the night of the show, my friend was walking and took a photo. And they changed the name on the show of Come Sit on My Sofa. Because they because they were so embarrassed about, because the guy that had green-lit the whole thing didn't think like a pervert. So he went, yes, sir, that's okay, come on my sofa. And apparently the whole theatre management were furious because it was in the booklets, it was in the papers, it was everywhere. So that's why they were being spiteful at the end and changed it to come sit on my sofa.
Yeah, I can imagine that having been to the Capitol in Horsham, lovely people, but I don't imagine that would have gone down very well.
It was a really Tory. I knew how to wind the council up, and it was the theatres connected to the council, and they've always had a hatred for me because I used to have a shop there, and so I used to have a newsagent, and hence newsagent provocateur.
That's where that comes from.
Yeah. So I had a newsagent, and I got, in 2009, I got nearly arrested. I put a sign outside the shop, you know, like newspaper billboards. I did my own to wind people up, and it went, Crawley girl gives birth to Pitbull.
Right.
And people were absolutely furious. At Horsham and the council. So I used to love winding them up. And one time I paid a parking fine in pound coins and jelly. I don't know why. Attention-seeking fool. But, yeah, Horsham is a very... It's my hometown, effectively, but I spent years trying to wind them up. The powers that be, not the normal people.
No. The people, the people in charge that tell us what we should and shouldn't be watching.
Yeah,
and they're all straight laced. What really annoys me about these people is that they are up in arms about these things. Oh, that's a disgrace. That's an aberration. That should be wiped off the face of the earth. Yeah, they're the ones that should have their hard drives checked.
I know they're the ones taking up the shitter. They are behind
their wives' backs. That's the thing. If you don't be telling us what we should and shouldn't, what's good taste and what isn't good taste, when you're sneaking about doing like dressed as a fucking baby, getting someone to wipe your ass for 50 quid an hour.
I had that happen once. A man came to my house, took off his biker gear, and I was like, "Where is he?" And he was laying on the floor and he had a nappy on.
No.
And he said, I was like, what are you doing? And he was like, I'm just, will you help me take my nappy off? And I went, absolutely not.
Oh, my God.
I mean, there's no funny ending to it. It was just.
And then he had to get, did he get dressed again?
Yes, and got back on his 125 moped or whatever it was he got on. It was a really, I never understand. I'm a bit old fashioned. As much as I might talk dirty about stuff and be a bit boring and repetitive about it, I like just being in bed and just doing nice things with nice people. I don't want to be strung up by my balls on the ceiling, having my bum whacked by a ping pong bat whilst having my face slapped with a wet fish by some horny little Puerto Rican man. I don't, actually, I probably would. But on the, but that, I don't, the pain and the weirdness, like, and I think society now is into more pain and more weirdness. It's down to porn, basically. Men and women are watching stuff and thinking, it's perfectly normal to be hung up by your balls now, Gordon. Mm. And so they just do this. I don't know what I'm saying, Richie.
I know exactly what you're saying. Yes, there's so much. When I was growing up and knowing, I've said this before, But when I was growing up and I'm into certain things, I thought I was really weird because nobody talked about it because it wasn't the internet. So you thought, you just thought everybody was having just missionary sex, and you knew people were gay and you knew people were straight, and you knew that there were trans people, and you knew there were, and it was all, but there wasn't this whole kind of, you know, buffet of weird and wonderful things of people getting dressed as animals. And you know, like if you saw a gimp, it would be in a comedy show or a film, and it would be mocked. You be like, and you'd be like, oh, look at that weirdo. And he's like, that's not what I'm into, by the way. I was just saying. But now I'm older, and now the internet exists. What I like is very, very vanilla. It's very boring.
Same here. I like good old fashioned two people making love. What a freak I am!
What a weirdo.
Yeah, you're a weirdo too. Then you know.
I know. I'm so weird.
I think porn is one of the worst things that could have ever happened to this world.
It's not
as much as I'm saying that as a man that used to get high and love watching it till 4 a.m.
Yes,
but now I don't. I think it's just giving a generation of youngsters thinking that's how it's done, and it's there about respect and about lack of respect, lack of love. It's, you know, the whole spitting and slapping and stuff. And I get that when you're a couple, you try stuff, but these lads and girls, they start off like that. They think that's how it's done. Game of Thrones style sex. I'm just jealous they're getting it, really.
I think there is too much access to everything. And the sense of discovery is now gone. You know that, because it's just there. If you like something, be it sexual or music or whatever, it's just there. I used to have a list that I used to carry in my wallet of the records that I wanted to find that you couldn't get anywhere because you didn't have the internet. So it was like this. Like, oh, I remember that song. Oh, I need to find that album, and I'd write it down. And then when it was in a record shop, and I'd find it, and I'd be like, oh my god, I found it. And that joy that I got, you just don't have that now. Now you're like, oh, I remember that album. I'll have a look, see if I can get it. And then within 20 minutes, you've got a copy, you know.
I remember the joy of ringing up a radio station, hearing your name mentioned and a song that you wanted to play.
Yeah.
And it's that same feeling of like, they're just not going to experience anything like that. We've experienced so much wonderful things. I think we've had the best of it, Rich. I think we've had up until the last 10 years, previous to that, like 90s to, you know, 2012, I'd say, we experienced some wonderful, and the 80s, wonderful, wonderful things that this generation will never experience and never appreciate anything.
No, and you sound like such an old prick when you talk like this, but you go, no, listen to what I'm saying. I'm not saying that I'm just, I feel sorry that you won't experience these things. Yeah. That sense of, oh, wow, this is incredible. That moment of, oh, yeah. You know, it's all there in front of you, and it's a shame. And I don't know. I like the internet, obviously, otherwise we'd be able to do this. But at the same time, it's having too much choice just doesn't do anyone any favours.
Do you know what I'd love to see happen? I'd love to see the internet disappear for a while and watch a load of 13 to 30-year-olds lose their shit. Because if we lost the internet now, we would be like, oh, fuck, we have to go into shops, or we couldn't do stuff like this. But we could get back to normal. We could get back to using the house phone and going, meet me down the pub, see you at 8. You know, life would go on for us, but for the younger generation, I would love to see them. I mean, they wouldn't know what to do with themselves. I am desperate for something like that to happen, because that generation are so fucked. And in 20 years' time, that fucked generation are going to be running our country and telling us what to do. That's it. I'd rather be dead, you know. Mate. So it's we've experienced it, some lovely stuff. And I reckon we could experience that again if it all went tits up. We would cope.
Yeah. I think there's an assumption that, having spoken to, because I've got sons that are 26 and 31, and speaking to them And they're coming away from social media, a lot of them.
Yeah.
They're just going, oh, I just don't need it, Dad. I'm, you know, like my youngest has just got himself a car. And
is that off all social media or certain ones that they've gone, oh, we don't do that? Are they?
Oh, they're just getting bored with it. They're just going, oh, I just want to go and do something else. Or they're all gaming, or they're doing they're doing other things. And I think what will happen is, like all of these things, they're cyclical, aren't they? So at the minute, it feels like this is the end. The internet's everything. This is blah, blah, blah. But the next generation will find their thing and they'll go, actually, no, we're going back out. You know, at the moment, people aren't drinking or as much, or they're doing whatever. But then it'll come around again where people are going out and getting fucked. And, you know, because that's what human beings do. So I think we have to focus on that and go, look, It feels a bit tricky now, but the next generation are more clued up than we give them credit sometimes.
And do I think your sons, you know, do your sons go on? Do they go out dating, or do they go out old fashioned way? Go out getting pissed to meet a girl? Or are they all on Tinder? And
I don't think either of them went on dating apps. I don't, my really? My eldest has been married for a couple of years. He's always been. He's definitely
not on dating apps.
I don't now think my married. Youngest. Yeah. We're back to the counsellors of Horsham again.
Yeah.
I don't think they did. They've met their partners out in the wild, out at gigs and things like that. So
really.
Yeah. I think. Do you know what? It's funny. I did a gig the other day. I was in Bristol. And I was stood at the back, and there was a mixed bunch, but they were mainly quite young kind of students, you know, late teens, early 20s. And I was at the back, and I'm like, oh, what am I going to say to these people? Are they going to think I'm just an old prick? Am I this? Am I that? And then I watched one of the other acts, and he did this whole bit about the fact that he carries around photos of Adolf Hitler with him. And it sounds shit, but it was really funny. And the place was falling apart. They were laughing their heads off so much. And it cracked for me. I went, oh, all right, yeah, we're going to be fine. And I went on and I went, you know what? You young people, you get a bad rep for being like too right on, and you're too busy shouting at Gen X and blaming us for all this shit. And I've just watched you lot laughing at pictures of Adolf Hitler. And I'm we're going to be fine.
When they were laughing at that, that was proper belly laugh, right?
Yeah.
And I think that you'll know this more than I ever will.
No. After this, you will start getting back out there, and you are going to start gigging, because you're going to get a punch in the face from your mate, and I'm going to kick you in the ass.
You're going to what? In the ass?
I'll kick you in the ass the same time.
I couldn't hear the kick. I just.
Oh, right. Yeah. I went a bit weird then.
Yeah. But you know, with comedy, as it is with it changing, when a guy does that about Hitler and there's proper belly laughs, is there more, would you say that comedians have tamed down everything, or do you think is there loads of people like the guy doing the Hitler stuff? Is that because there's still I think there's a real desire. When I did a Facebook show live and it was foul, there's a real desire for the naughty, because the naughty has become so, you know, people are so scared of saying stuff. But when someone like does the Adolf Hitler thing, people fall about. There is a market still for that style of humour, right? Please tell me there is.
Yeah, there is. Absolutely, there is. That's what I'm saying to you. There's an assumption that, you know, you can't say anything anymore, and you can't do this and you can't do that. But you can, you know, in context, and you can. It all depends on the intent. Depends on the intent. You know, like he wasn't making fun of the people that, you know, that what Hitler had done. He was making fun of Hitler.
Hitler.
And, you know, and it was like in the context of it and the intent, and it was like, oh yeah, that's really funny. And I think that's it. It's you know, there is a market for it. People aren't they are standing up for people, and they are, you know, they are raising their voices against what's going on, you know, in Gaza and you know, trans issues and gay rights and things like that. But at the same time, they're having a moment where they're going, oh, I just want to laugh at a picture of Adolf Hitler for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, there's that release, you know?
Yeah, I think
it's a good balance.
Yeah. Do you, Is there a real sort of trend in comedy at the moment when you're out there? Do you notice that there's a certain style that is happening, or certain, is it very topic led? Is there just nonsense? Is it a mixture of, is there just people there just to make people laugh, or people who want to have a voice and say something with a bit of funny?
I think there seems to be a lot of people talking about, like I've said this before, they give a long list of, they go, oh, hello, my name's blah, 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 and I have ADHD, I have this, I have this, or I'm autistic, I'm blah, I'm blah, before they've even said anything else. And you kind of go, I've said it before, and you kind of go, all right, just let's not focus on that bit, but write material about it. And then people go, oh, they're autistic. Oh, they're this, they're that. There's a bit of a trend just listing things, and you're like,
It just isn't enough, is it? Because, you know, like, if you're a certain style of comedian, I don't know, Francesca Martinez or Rosie Jones, you know, she doesn't need to say it. I mean, she does, and they do. But it's, you know, when you haven't got something obvious, why bother? Because it's fucking boring. You know, come up with something a bit better than that. Not, I don't mean Rosie and Francesca and others. No. Like, you know, that's it. I'm talking about the people that aren't visibly disabled. You know, I've got ADHD, but I wouldn't want to go up there and start off. It's just like people like, and the rest of the world's got ADHD. Who cares? You know, Rosie and Francesca are different because, you know, not many people are, you know, like Rosie were, when she started, were doing that, you know.
No.
What he was doing.
No, but that's
it. She opened the way.
Yeah, I think it's all very well talk about these things, but it shouldn't just be, and maybe it's a defense thing. Maybe it's a nerves thing where they go, look, I have this, and this. So I don't know. I don't know what it is.
But that's the trend at the minute. The audience don't care as long as it's funny.
Yes, and you know that's what I mean? It. At the end of the day, it's that. If it's funny, people will work. People will laugh. It doesn't matter about anything.
For people to have to hear about you or something about you that's not obvious, obviously an obvious disability about it, to have people hear about you, they have to care about you. Mm. And so if you're going to divulge a little bit of private information about you, the audience have to give a fuck. Yeah. And if the audience don't give a, they're sat there going, well, I don't know you from Adam, like, you know. And I know that there might be certain things that you might connect with certain audience members, but just go out there and fucking make people laugh. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly, sort of, John.
That's it. However you do it, just make people laugh.
Yeah, and that's the thing as well. What I've noticed as well is that if you get too political, people can tend to just sort of switch off a bit. They're like, oh, all right, I get it. Can you just, I've just come out to forget about all that for a minute. You know, I've got this bit
in the 90s or 80s, when Dallas and Dynasty were on the telly and people had, like, lives were a bit shit, turned on BBC One and they saw these glamorous people with big shoulder pads slapping each other in big mansions. And it was a watch of, like, wow, you know, this is, we've got EastEnders, it's grim, but they're it was a bit of light relief. It was to take you away. And I see that about the comedy. It's just like, I would be bored shitless if I saw a comedian talk about politics, you know, or social things that are going on at the time. I don't see that as clownery. I don't see you as a clown. I see you as a wordsmith and a clever wordsmith. And that's very good. But for me, comedy has to be about the visual, the funny bones, the funny voices, the way you say it, the timings. That to me is someone that will get me engrossed. You know, someone talking about stuff, I can get that if I go to the pub and listen to the pub bore. You know, you know, I don't want that. I want to go and be entertained and go, I've just watched something magical and fun and I've laughed. Because that's the whole idea of going to a comedy club, right? Is to laugh.
Absolutely.
Not to come away. And you're allowed to make a point with it. But, you know, there's the comedians. Like, what's his name, that really well-known one? Has his own BBC Two show. Worked with Richard Herring. Can't remember his name.
Stuart Lee.
Partner. Yeah. Like, he can strike the happy balance of that. You know, he can. That's his thing. But would I go and pay to see Stuart Lee? No. Could I watch him on telly for 5 minutes? Yes.
Yeah.
I don't know what I'm saying, really.
I remember being in Edinburgh a few years ago with Eddie Brimson, and Eddie's got this real, he's like, he'll go. He likes to go and find weird and wonderful like acts, not just straight stand up. He's really into quite sort of surreal and slapstick stuff. And he came back and he said, "I've just seen this fella. We have to go and see him tomorrow." And I'm like, "Who was it?" And I can't remember his name, Bob something. And he's from Yorkshire, I think. And he would just be on stage with a tea tray and he's doing the tea tray song. And he's got a guy stood behind him. What's he doing? Wearing a balaclava, holding something else. And we're just watching this. And I was like, this is one of the best things I've ever seen. It's just, it didn't make any sense. And it was brilliant. And then he handed out trays, like paper trays to everybody. And then we were all doing the, you know, like the wagon train or whatever it is, where you have to bang the tray on your head.
Yeah.
And we're all doing that.
Amazing. See,
it was
that,
brilliant.
That, I love that. But I went to see, there's very few comics that I can go and watch an hour and a half. Jerry Sadowitz is one of them. Hmm. And I'm a big Sadowitz fan, and I love the outrageous. And he had someone as an open act. And they spent they did an audio, I don't know, it would be the cast of EastEnders, or it would be like the cast of TVAM would be talking. It would be like a recording. And then at the end of the recording, just for, he would get out, he would have a pretend machine gun, and he would just, the machine gun noise would come on, and he'd be killing all the cast of TVAM or, it doesn't make sense what I'm saying at all, does it? He just used an audio, had pretend machine guns and pretended to shoot at them. That was it. I know it doesn't do it any justice, me explaining it to you now, but I loved it. It was visually great and it was terrible, but, you know.
But
anyway,
it's the intent, isn't it? Again, it's the intent. I like to watch people that say stuff and I go, whoa, that's a bit near the mark. But you know they're joking. Like, they're joking. They're not.
But you do it, don't you? Because you go... because you'll say something rude or terrible and they go, I'm only, you do, don't you? Almost like the only, I'm just kidding.
I don't mean it.
yeah. Because you're likable. You can get away with saying more terrible things than you probably care to imagine, because your likability means that the audience will allow you off from that.
Yeah, there is a bit of that. I've been talking about my new baby and saying about, I said this before, how, all I do is put fluid in him and then fluid just comes flying out. That's all he is at the minute. He's just a tube. If you had a car like that, you'd scrap it. Like, maybe I'll do that. He's not been around long. I'll sell him for parts. Like,
Do it.
But I did it in Bristol and they went, oh, and I went, all right, yeah, that was a bit. And I go, oh, that was a bit. All right, yeah, maybe that was a bit dark. It was like the first thing I said.
Yeah. Maybe not the first thing. Maybe sort of way into. But yeah, fuck it. I think you've got the ability to do that. I think when you're likable and you say terrible things, people let you get away with it more than you when you're. You know, half of Frankie Boyle's problem, not that he would care what I have to say, was if he was a little bit more likable, he wouldn't have got into nearly as much shit as he did. But it's because he doesn't come across.
A really nice bloke.
I know he is as off the stage, but on stage he doesn't
have persona,
a
lot. Yeah.
He knows that he doesn't have a likable persona, but you know, yes. for a real sort of comedy for me, you know, like Les Dawson and all those ones, big stars that I used to love, they were all likable. Dame Edna, all likable, that could say really quite naughty things, but they got away with it.
Mm.
I love.
Yeah,
that.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah, do you remember Hinge and Bracket?
Yeah, I do. Yeah,
I did.
One of them died, I think, last year. But I,
I was never a big fan.
They were very old fashioned.
Yeah, I was never a fan. I just remember them being on a lot, like Pebble Mill and things like that.
Oh God, that's real. Do you remember Pebble Mill was great? We used to be off school. I used to get my £1 from Mum. I used to get my pot noodle, my jam donut, and sit and watch Pebble Mill with Judy Spires.
See? Oh, yeah. Wonderful. I used to watch the Sullivans as well. Yeah,
did you like the Sullivans?
I used to love the Sullivans.
I used to hate that one.
Did you? I did for a bit, and then one day something clicked and then I couldn't wait to get home for lunch and then watch the Sullivans while I'm eating a boiled egg.
I used to hate the opening credits because it was almost, it wasn't in colour. And then one of them would, they would all gather together and one would grab a hat and run off and the sister would run off after them. It was in the opening credits.
Oh, yeah.
I used to hate that, and I used to hate Flying Doctors, and I used to hate Sesame Street, but I used to love, obviously, the odd Neighbours. Well, Neighbours was my thing.
Hated Neighbours. I wasn't a big fan of Sesame Street, really, to be honest. I'm not a big fan of the Muppets either. I know this is terrible.
I don't like puppets or cartoons generally. I had my first, Neighbours gave me my first TV hard on.
Really?
When Jason and Kylie got married. Remember that famously? They kissed each other in a way that I'd never seen two people kiss each other on telly. It went open mouthed because you were so used to seeing people are not kissing like that, like dead on their lips. They opened their mouths. And I remember that was my first TV hard on. My first visual hard on was Linda Lasardi. How times have changed.
Really?
Yeah. News the world.
But mine was Wonder Woman, Linda Carter.
Bella Enberg is Blunder Woman, isn't it, really?
It was Bella Enberg.
Yeah, don't lie now. Was it really Linda Carter?
Yeah, Linda Carter, yeah. There we are.
What about now?
Well, I don't know. I don't know where it's gone now. I don't even look at porn anymore. I get bored.
You can't
That's
be
what
bored.
Happens when you get old.
Saying that because your wife might be listening to this one?
No, we actually talked about this last night. We were, because someone we know has got into trouble with it, and we were both saying, like, I don't care what you look at, it's up to you. Don't look at what you want, like, as long as it's, you know, legal, do what you like.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good start, really. As long as it's legal, does it matter? It depends. You two seem to have quite a confidently nice thing going on. So I think when you've got a connection that you're both on the same level, I think, and the trust and all that is there, it works. It's when there isn't that's when the problems arise. But you two seem to have it. I don't know you, obviously, at all, really. But from what I see and spoke to, you two seem to sort of have there's a certain thing there that I think you probably have an understanding of each other.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, though, considering what we've done in the last, you know, a couple of years since we've been together, we've only really started to get to know each other in that time. It's like we got married after a year, and then we had a baby the year after. It's like,
what next? What will next year be?
That's what we were saying yesterday. Like, what the fuck? Like, one of us is going to die, or
I think Kate should go and do stand up with her baby.
I think she's going to, yeah, or maybe. Yeah, when she gets back out there, she's going to start. Like,
with a pram next to her on stage.
Just pushing the pram as she's doing her bit.
No, seriously, never been done. Start breastfeeding while she's telling jokes. Never been done. You could start breastfeeding while telling jokes. Never been done.
It's never been done. John, this has been lovely. Thank you so much for joining us, mate. So the next time I see you, you're going to be back out there gigging. Just a little, you're going to have to do the little open mic gigs and things like that just to get some stage time and some confidence.
Yeah.
I'm going to hassle you.
No, I will do it. I will. I just need that. I don't need support because I never needed support before, but I do. There is something that's sort of lacking. So you'll probably get the occasional DM from me. It won't be rude either. It will, because obviously what you do is what I would like to be doing. Is I don't want to be closing a set. I mean, you can do all that with your eyes closed. I just want to hold a show together and then fuck off. But I need to have something more substantial if someone doesn't turn up. And, you know, that happens to you all the time. Suddenly someone that said they're coming can't. And that means you'll probably end up doing another 20 minutes. You know, the compere's got to make it better. The compere's got to sort of, can't just go, nothing, the show's not going to happen for another 20 minutes, just drink. You've got to put it all together. So, I've just got to get that bit. But I just think getting out there, first of all, is the key.
Because then, as well, you'll start to make connections and you'll start to meet people. And I think, and I was guilty of this as well, is spending too much time on your own you do start to imagine stuff, and you do start to. I get in my head all the time. I'm like, oh, people think I'm a knob, or I think I'm an idiot, or this, that, and the other. And it's not until I go, I'll just message and ask about that gig, or message and ask about that thing. And 9 times out of 10, they go, oh, mate, we just thought you were busy and didn't want to do it. Yeah, come and do it.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, this is all in your own head. Like all these things, yeah. You know, thinking that people don't want to see you or don't like you or blah, blah, blah. I think this would do you the world of good, John, to get back out there, mate. And it will help you. You know this. It will help you with all the other stuff as well, like the fear of losing people. And, you know, you'll start to understand things a bit more, because having spoken to you today, and what you were telling me, it's like, it saddens me, John, that someone as wonderful as you is hiding away. You know, I don't want that, John. I want you to come out into the world and put the dicks to one side for 10 minutes and come and do something with me for a bit. I'd like that. Come and join us.
No, I know. I should do my first one again with your compound, but you don't ever do open spots, do you? At your gigs, you're beyond that now. You know what I mean?
No. We've got our own. We've got a couple of our own. That's what we're going to do. We've got a couple of our own gigs. You're going to come and do that. That's what you're going to do. All right. We've got a lovely gig. We've got a lovely gig near East Grinstead, and you're going to come and do that.
Where's that?
Lovely bunch. It's at the Hop Yard in Forest Row.
My parents live in East Grinstead. That's where I was born.
Well, you are then. What a wonderful way to restart your career.
I know. Shall I invite them along and horrify them? I mean, they would have a heart attack. They once saw my show at Crawley, and one of the shows involved my testicles coming out, and it was on video, and they were on the Hoff Theatre. My balls looked like space hoppers. And it suddenly occurred to me that Mum was in the audience, and I was like, bet you haven't seen those, you know, she hasn't seen those since I was a toddler in a bath. And then all of a sudden now, as a 35-year-old adult, they were up there on the screen like massive kahunas. Anyway, I don't know what I'm saying. I vowed never to have her again at a show. Listen, I will do that.
Yes.
I will. Because you could save me from getting punched in my face by my best friend.
There you go.
But I'd like to say thank you for being lovely. And if anyone has stuck through this whole hour, then you deserve an award. But I'm sorry it was all about dongs all most of the way through. But I really appreciate you being so lovely. And, you know, you didn't ask me to come on. I asked you to come on because knew that I wanted to chat to you. And I appreciate your kindness. It means a lot. Because I wouldn't do this otherwise. Man. I wouldn't do this with someone I didn't know. I hate doing them. But not with you.
So. This has been lovely. And you're going to make me cry in a minute.
You've got a way about you, which is kind.
Thanks, mate. I'm going to send you my number. We're going to exchange numbers. I'm going to get you to do this gig, and then your mate won't punch you in the mouth. That's what we're going to do.
Okay.
So where can we find you on the... Go on.
Can we get off with each other out the back, see what it's like?
I'll give you a snog. All right.
Will you?
Yeah.
I've got a little bit of gingivitis. I hope you don't mind. I haven't. If anyone's listening, I haven't got gingivitis. Halitosis.
Oh God, that's awful. Well, congratulations.
Who has halitosis these days? Do you know anyone with halitosis? No one under the age of 60 has halitosis anymore.
Do you want to bring it back? This sounds awful.
Bring back halitosis.
What a song. John, where can we find you on the socials, mate?
You can find me in most disabled toilets in Morrison's around the country.
Okay.
But if not, newsagent, I don't know. I'm not on Twitter at the moment, and I'm on Facebook, but on Instagram, newsagent, just look up newsagent provocateur. I'm around. I'm lurking like a pervert in a park.
In a park.
just lurking around, not really too active. Occasionally I come out and do a deed, and then I go back behind the bush. Then I go back behind the bushes.
It's the fact that you call them deeds. Oh God. Yeah. Why does that sound worse? Oh, John. It's been lovely talking to you. This has been Insane in the Membrane. I've been Rich Wilson. This has been Dame John O'Sullivan. What a wonderful chat. And we'll see you next time.
Thank you. Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.